that's the spot where the sperm got his head bit off by the ovum. Or sucked in by the ovum. It's the contact ignition point between the two masses. Now, samadhi, or God realization, by the Eastern philosophers, most people thought it means seeing God. I've studied and had to go through it myself, and then I come to realize what it means is much more dynamic than the word realize. It is the ignition experience of the cellular structure of the sperm and ovum making contact for the first time at the detonation level of the atom. When the Swami that made you Swami years ago walked in the room and he looked all around, and I had the experience of going into that level before I met him, through the help of Yogananda. And all of a sudden he walked and looked around, and he walked right up and he said, I'll make you a Swami right now. My ex-wife said, what the hell that makes me now? I'm nothing. So he sort of got me good. But he, later on, we were discussing, I said to him, when did you first have the experience of seeing this atomic structure in China? He was initiated by his teacher at the age of 14. And up to 64 years of age, owning his own business, being in jail with Gandhi and everything, come out and own his own, he never saw a single thing in his head. All he could do is sit down and blank, blank, blank. All his buddies who were in Vichy, he was seeing all kinds of wonderful experiences. So he retired at 64 and he went to see his teacher. Now picture this. He was 14. At the time he was initiated by the teacher was 45. He's 64 years of age now. You can imagine how old the teacher is. The teacher is living in a cave, and he comes to the cave to look for his teacher, expecting to see the teacher on the floor, and there's the teacher floating in the room. I say, what do you want? Well, that blew his mind. Here's a 64-year-old man, huh? And he tells himself, Adam, I'm 83 years now, since from that time to when we met. That's 20-some-odd years. He said, I look up and I said, Swamiji, Master, I have been a faithful student, I've practiced my meditation, but I don't see anything. All my brothers, they've tried, they've done, and they've had wonderful experiences, they've talked about the glories of God. Me, I'm still in the miseries of my brain. And then the teacher says, get out of here and you don't come back no more! Picture somebody up in their 90s or 100s telling you, get the heck out of it, little old floating around in the room, don't come back no more. I've grown there 6 or 7 years of age. But he walked out of the race and he can argue good. And he said he sat down. And in his heart, he said, only out of respect for the man. And then he decided to close his eyes to meditate again and do what he was told. And he said, as soon as he closed his eyes to do the meditational technique, his head went like a 4th of July. And he looked at me, you know what 4th of July is? I said, yeah, but you don't mean Independence Day. No, no. Oh, I get it. You saw fireworks? He said, yeah. He says, and it never stopped. With eyes open, eyes shut, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's going on. He said, but it took many years for me to understand what it was. I thought maybe I must have busted a nerve or something. And then when he went through the process, then he said, no, you've experienced it and you know what it is. I said, yes, but it isn't what people think it is. People take drugs to get it, but they don't know what it is. I said, well, for me, in my personal experience when I went through it, it was when the sperm bonded with the ovum and it ignited and the whole ionic it released. He said, that's exactly what it is, but the average person doesn't know that. And he says, I'm scientifically trained. And I began to put the whole thing together and realigning that this was his doctor. And he was a doctor, too, a scientist. And so he knew his chemistry very well. And then he went through all the frames in it. And then you say, you know, after it happened, he never believed that he could have the same experience as his teacher. I said, Swami, you don't have to tell me. I done sense it already. You've got it all. He says, all right, but let's talk about it scientifically. He says, you understand mass? I said, yes. There's 144 elements. It only has two speeds. I said, yeah, I understand that. One speed is for it to be visible, and another speed for it to be invisible. But if you are stupid enough to think you're going to get through the invisible range without some guidance, you smash your head up into it. Agreed, Adana? I says, yes, sir, are you sure? Because I began to see the physics now. Objects are only, what, visible and tangible at a certain speed. If this piece of paper is made out of 8 minerals that is listed on this board here and look like a piece of paper, and at this speed it's visible that you can touch it and call it the matchbox. Take those same 8 minerals and move your slip faster, that the eyes don't see it. But that doesn't destroy the mass, but it just moved faster than the eye could see. And you got in its way, what would happen to you?
Get hit.
You'd knock you all over the spot, right? And so these are the extrasensory phenomena that are constantly occurring now, people don't know. They're in the way of many mass moving at the speed to which it is invisible to be seen.
So the speed, does it have to move from one point to another, or can it just be the speed of the atoms themselves that speed up?
It just flips.
So it has to move, relatively speaking, from one point to another point.
All right, let me put it this way. How far is the Pleiades from the Earth?
Light years, hundreds of light years, thousands of light years. I don't know exactly. It's just light years.
Why not?
Millions of light years.
Well, that's not sure. Well, and they're not even in the same place. There are millions of the stars are millions of stars away from each other.
Maybe 178,000 light years. Sometimes.
Good.
Whatever.
It only takes them 9 minutes to come here.
Yeah.
9 minutes.
From the Pleiades to come to the Earth.
Which time frame is it?
You see them when they slow down at 186,000 miles a second, and they can flip out of your range in exactly a split second, and they're back into the invisible range, and it'll take them 9 minutes to get back where they came from.
Mm, I like that. What kind of body based are the Pleiadians?
The Pleiadians are silicon based. But they can travel from the Pleiades to Earth or Terra and be visible in a matter of 9 minutes. Now, how fast does the light travel from the Sun to the Earth?
186,000.
Huh? 8 minutes.
How many minutes?
8.
Good. Therefore,
they travel faster than light. Pleiades.
I said 9 minutes. He said, how many minutes from the Sun
eight.
To the Earth? Which one is faster?
The light.
But how much farther away is the Pleiades
yeah.
than the Sun?
Pleiades is a lot farther than the Sun. Wow.
Right, so
good!
So.
Now you see why it takes them 9 minutes? And the further they are, it only takes extra amount of minutes for that particular differential. But they're operating as a mass outside of the speed of light. But they're not operating at the speed of light squared. Objects can move at the speed of light. An object can move faster than the speed of light. And the speed of light is 186,000 miles a second. That's not the speed of energy. Energy is 186,000 miles per second squared. That's a big difference in the two physics. So objects can travel in space faster than the speed of light per second and not disintegrate their mass and remain invisible and cover vast mileage in a short space of time.
What happens if they go faster than the speed of light squared?
Then you don't have a mass.
So then the fourth dimension, fifth dimension, sixth dimensions are all under that square.
That's right. Now, Yogananda put it this way. The law of miracle operates in the energy equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. If a mass gained more weight to move at the velocity of 186,000 miles a second, where would the mass end up? If this mass, while moving at 186,000 miles a second, kept gaining weight, how far would this mass move?
Kept gaining weight?
Mm-hmm.
It would stop eventually.
Therefore, mass cannot gain weight in momentum. Mass would have to what?
Descend, lose weight.
Mass would have to what? Stay stationary,
right,
and non-gainable, but move within the momentum of light to be what?
Invisible.
Invisible, or become the light. So, to put it in a terminology where we, the individual, can use that formula, he said, your 144 elements, which your body is made of, if you look under the microscope, it will fit on top of your thumbnail. The total quanta will fit on top of a thumbnail. Consider that quanta representing your mass equal to the word infinite. It simply means no amount of speed is going to add more weight to it. No amount of speed is going to add more weight to it. It's going to become omnipresent. And Einstein took that idea when he met Mr. Bose, who was discussing, Dr. Bose, who was discussing these laws, and what they did, they took a clock, weighed it, but it wasn't turned on. And after they weighed it, and got the measurement of the weight of the clock not working, then they wind the clock up and put it back on the scale, and they noticed a strange phenomenon occurred.
You weighed more. No?
No, you weighed less.
Yes.
Weighed less.
They could not understand that. But then Dr. Bose explained to Einstein that the mass was stationary, but the kinesis had increased by the momentum of its internal parts, which set the mass to what? Becoming less. So, within your own body of 144 elements, if you set the momentum of it by breathing, which is turning the clock on, the miracle is possible within the environment for you to experience. So Brother Jesus, he didn't create anything new, but he Xeroxed everything that he needed. What was the first thing he Xeroxed?
Oh, fishes
and bread
and
fish.
No, wine.
Wine.
Did he go to a wedding? Mm-hmm. And what his mother did come and said to him?
There wasn't any wine.
All right, they say we don't have no more wine. And what did he say to tell his mother?
No problem. My time is not yet come.
That's a very important scientific statement, though it may seem very religious or philosophical. It's the essence of all laws of physics.
What is it again?
The time has not yet come.
My time has not yet come. But when the time did come, for him to act. And before he did act, his mother turned to the servants and said, do what he says. Do means to act. What he says is a sonic principle. He's telling his mother, my time ain't yet come. That's a momentum principle. They are lacking wine, which is a liquid with a certain flavor in it, from a certain fruit that extracted the flavor in the form of elements that look like a grape to be fermented X amount of time to taste like wine. But he ain't gonna make no new wine by going. He's going to fulfill the desire, the conceptual craving of the people in that hall. And what was the conceptual craving they were? The word wine, right? In the form of a liquid that they could put in their mouth, that they're accustomed to. Even when they're sound asleep, they wouldn't even know what it tastes like. See? But they'll go through the charade. And he's going to play their game for them because he's going to wait for the right momentum of the time frame of the mass of the 144 elements. And then he's going to interface the sonics. So the mother says, do what he says. She already sensed the energy field. And then he walks over and reaches his hand across the pot. Did he create wine or did he Xerox wine?
Xerox.
Yeah.
Because you said so already.
And then he said, pour and go give the man. They pour it out and took it right up to the place. And here is the response. The man who is the official wine taster is making a comment to the bridegroom. How come you serve the good wine last instead of the good wine first? The bridegroom did not know the difference, and he didn't know where the wine came from in the first place, so how could he answer the wine taster? But the wine taster was able to differentiate the quality of the wine. Now, the amount of energy expended by Brother Jesus to Xerox the quantity of wine, a buddy of mine did some mathematics, and it'll freak your mind out. Of how much energy we as individuals possess and don't even use. He done the physics and he says, to Xerox that bucket of wine was X million amperes of energy to Xerox it in that split second.
I don't understand what you're saying when you say Xerox it. What are you saying happens?
Have you ever Xeroxed a piece of paper?
Yeah.
What do you do?
That's light and particles and heat.
All right, but what are you Xeroxing?
An image.
Good. And then you have a copy?
Uh-huh.
And you can go and sell the copy and make money?
Uh-huh.
He's Xeroxing a liquid for them to drink that they could go and sell and make money to.
Yeah, but how is he doing that?
The same way that Xerox machine is doing it. You think you invented a Xerox machine that can't be done by your brain? Who invented a Xerox machine? Now tell me the other truth. Who invented a Xerox machine? The brain, the nose, the eye, the mouth, the tuchus, or the hands, or the feet? Which one of the parts of the anatomy invented the Xerox machine?
Well, the brain thought it out first.
Well, how can a brain think if you don't breathe?
Oxygen.
Good. It sounds comical, but this is what we got to live with. We walk around with all our notions, and it'll show you. Any person who has invented anything will always tell you the whole idea came to them in a few minutes while they were sound asleep between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't know a single invention of any value in our environment that is making money that the inventor would not admit how he got the whole entire geometry presented to his brain. Now he's sleeping, that means he has to shut down. But that doesn't say he stopped breathing.
Or his meditation.
even if you want to call it meditating or phasing down or having a dream, whatever that is going on in that level of the brain, he still has to breathe. The oxygen is still got to go in that brain and go through the process of appearing as a geometry for a functional action. Now, photographic memory is achieved the same way, but you don't use it. You have the oxygen, but you don't use it. I can't force you to do it, but I have to force myself to use it to pass my exams.
What does he speed up in order to manifest or to Xerox wine? There must be some process that goes on by which
let's say the wine is made of four elements. Huh? Mm-hmm. Let's say it's made of four elements, and these four elements operate at a certain speed to be a grape, to be squashed, to be fermented, to be a wine, to be used. And I say it took them to gather the grape, to squash it, to ferment it, to use it approximately 430 days. It took to gather those grapes up, mm-hmm. get them to be able to be used for the purpose of drinking it. 430 days is equal to how many minutes? 3 hours about to get it, see? And then if energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared, what is this Xeroxing condition going to do? Speed the movement of the atom or the mineral of the actual wine that is sitting there that is empty and a residue that's in the pot? What is he doing? Stimulating the what? Those residual elements on the wall of the pot to do what?
Reproduce.
Now, can the element go out of the world? Mm-hmm. Even the pot is empty? Is there not a residue of elements in the pot? Mm-hmm. And you take a most fantastic microscope and look at it, and you've got millions of them sitting there in the pot.
So he's Xeroxing from what's already there.
Of course, and now he's compressing what? Mass, yes. So time.
Where does he get the mass?
The elements is there as the mass. This universe is made up of 144 elements. Your body is a miniature model of it.
Right.
If you were to reduce you down, take away all the so-called hot air out of you in the water, and reduce you down to your basic elements, they'll fit on top of your fingernail. That's all your minerals, 144, will equal a little clump of powder on top of your fingernail. But nature dilates you to look like a big human form with a lot of air and water. And the water is only hydrogen and oxygen. But if you take out the crystals of your skin, that's where we're coming to what crystals or minerals are used in your body. You first gotta understand what you are. All right, you made a skin. You have minerals in your skin. You agree? Mm-hmm. If I told you you only got 7 minerals in the top surface of your skin, you're gonna tell me no. All right. Show you any scientific book, and every doctor knows that, and every scientist knows that you don't have more than 7 basic minerals on the surface of your skin facing the sun. And all the rest are underneath that skin. Like it or not, we're stuck with it. And if one is missing, you got a wrinkle.
Which one? Yeah. This shirt, why don't you have the skin as an organ?
The skin is not an organ.
I thought it was.
That's what I learned.
That's what everybody would like to believe, but it ain't.
No. What is it?
This skin is a covering for extensions of itself inside of a tube well organized around a bunch of minerals, and the most important one that holds it to make it look important is the calcium. It's called a skeleton. The skeleton is calcium, and around it is all the other minerals floating in the solution of hydrogen and oxygen. And it's like a balloon with a fountain pen inside and the air around the fountain pen. That's exactly what a human being is. I hate to say it, but that's where we are. We're nothing but a blown up hot air balloon with a bunch of calcium, calling it a skeleton, and all the rest is just air and water. And the skin forms organs around it, like a tree makes leaves on its branches. When you cut enough cadavers up, as I have to do for my education in it, you see it. That's what it is. That turned me to the point, which was more important, to go around chopping up people or to learn how to live. The man who turned me on to nutrition and my health, I call him my stepfather. He was a surgeon at work and knew I broke my body. And he said to me, when I became aware of what was happening, he said, I don't have any children, my wife has passed on. He said, but I understand you very well. And I said, yeah. He said, I'll accept you as a son. I'll accept you as a dad. That was the conversation with the surgeon. He said, but I wouldn't want you to be a surgeon. But if you become a physical therapist, it would be of value to the world. But you must learn some of the chemistry and the cadaver work. And you must come to my clinic to learn it. And so he said, all my books are here, use them. You got questions, I'll answer it for you. He was a wonderful man.
Is he still here, Tommy? Is he still around?
No, he's on vacation now.
Is he?
Never say a person is dead. You block, the word dead blocks them out from your internal vision. You can't see them, they don't count. That word dead acts like a screen, shuts up. But if you say they're on vacation, whatever is their last deep desire in that body frame, and where they wanted to go and never went, they will be showing up to let you know and give you confirmation everything is A-okay, and they're dressed up in the costume of where they're going to have their vacation. Now, we have a friend who lives in Kilgore, Texas. Her husband went on vacation, and she called him telling me he's dying, dead. I told her, don't say that. You go through the process and he's gone on vacation. Okay, she cried. 2 days after the funeral, she calls me on the phone. And now you're not gonna believe this, and I don't even believe it. But Charlie, my husband, was here this morning and he was dressed up in his Hawaiian suit sitting at my breakfast table and enjoying looking at me, eating my breakfast, and said, everything is okay, honey, don't worry. I just want to let you know I'm enjoying my vacation. Now, if she said she'd imagine it, no, because he appeared to his other children. And one of the girls who I know, Liz, you know, she called me. I said, Liz, don't ever say your daddy dead. He's on vacation. Okay, and then a few days after, he showed up at Liz's house while she was having breakfast. Her husband had just left out of the room and he showed up. And she saw her dad dressed the same way as mom saw. Now the other daughter, you know, she don't trust all these kind of weirdos, especially her mother, her sister, a bunch of weirdos, gonna believe in that kind of jam. He shows up there and satisfies her too. And then he shows up to his son. And they all now see, when they ask where he is, oh, he's on a cosmic vacation. But that's the facts behind it. Now, I was in other places in Ohio, in Tennessee, and in Richmond, where folks had loved ones pass on just in the same short circuit of time. And I told them, don't say dead, say vacation. The phone calls keep coming in, telling me they're getting confirmation of their loved ones showing up to them to satisfy every doubt in their mind. not to worry as to where they are. The atoms cannot go no place. We only lock in our fixations to the fears.
But Hitler can be dead, right?
Hitler is not dead. He's on vacation.
Okay.
I'm still curious about the relationship between distance, space, and whether something is visible or invisible. Does there have to be a distance that an object, that mass has to move in order to become invisible? Or can it happen like, let's say if all of a sudden you became invisible, you haven't gone anywhere and you're still stationary.
I can speed up the momentum of the mass in the same location to be invisible by going 1 mile faster than I am visible right now. That would make me invisible. So the word would be incorrect to say I have dematerialized.
Right.
But faster could be pulse, not movement, just
that's right.
not.
Okay. Okay, so in that case then, let's say there could be a thousand entities in this room attending the lecture.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does that fit in a 3D space? Is there's different meshings of their molecular structures, so there's like overlays intertwining, or is everyone like retain their separate integrity, but at a different frequency they can occupy? I'm not making any sense.
You make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it's like,
look behind you and look at that shadow on the wall.
Okay.
How much space that occupies?
Zip.
Now, if a million of those shadows in this room, will it take up any space?
No.
That's exactly what the atoms are doing at that speed.
Okay.
But if a million people sitting in the room at this speed, we sure ain't got no room to put them in.
A million.
But that speed, you don't occupy much space. But at this speed, we occupy space. So we are in two speeds. The one that forces us to occupy space is 106,000 miles a second. The one that doesn't occupy space is 107,000 miles a second.
Okay, so a lot of the beings that are at that speed cannot come to our speed.
Yes.
But there are those of us who can go to that speed.
Yes.
And the only way you can do that is when you've been through a carbon-based body?
No. You have the option to come from that speed to this speed. And you have the option to go from this speed to that speed based upon one thing.
Desire.
Congratulations. You answered the question. If there is no desire on either light form or body form, it ain't gonna move the momentum. Your car is out there. If you don't turn the ignition to go home, it's gonna sit there for you ready to go home. That's the desire. But we're back, we're losing a lot of time in class three. I wanna cover something that is very important.
This is still three. No.
You need to know some extra trace minerals that are supposed to be put into the body, and that has to do with body dharma.
What are you looking
for? Do you have a piece of paper?
I got what? Do I have all the information?
Okay. These minerals must be in the body. These are extra trace minerals. And I'm going to give you the location where you put the
next. Oh, wait a minute.
In the red. Yes. Yitrium. Yitrium. is a superconductive element only found in spacecrafts that can break through 187,000 miles a second. But that's the latest superconductive trace mineral now being used by the research scientists in Houston and all over for the research of possibly making spacecrafts to cross the speed of light.
Yttrium. You're saying it can maintain what it is past the speed of sound.
Song of light.
A mammon of light. It won't change form.
No. It's using space. Speed of light is only 186,000 miles a second.
That's slow mo.
You can go 107,000 miles if you change the metal construct. But you need a trace mineral that is capable of withstanding the thermal heat of 186 without distortion. Yttrium is a trace mineral now found that they incorporate in three other minerals to produce it. It's called a superconductive metal. Yttrium. Beryllium. That's in the yellow. B-E-R-Y-I-L-L-I-U-M. Beryllium.
What's the first one?
Yttrium is in the red. Beryllium is in the yellow.
Would you spell it again?
Y.
B-E-R-Y-T-T-E-R-I-U-M. No, the other one.
What?
Beryllium? Yeah.
B-E-R-Y-I-L-L-I-U-M.
Okay. And what's a scoop on that?
I'm placing it first before I tell what it does.
Oh, okay.
If you don't know where it is going, you don't know what part of your body. Yttrium is in the red.
Okay.
Beryllium is in the yellow.
Got it.
Praseodymium is in the lemon. P R A S E D Y I U M. Proceed. In the green, we have thulium. T H U L L I U M. Samarium. S A M. A-R-I-U-M.
That's in which one?
Green. The green. Thulium and samarium.
Thulium is different than thallium.
That's right.
Okay.
And the blue, we have niobium.
Niobium?
Niobium. Sumerium. These are trace minerals.
How do you spell that?
Sumer. S-U-M-E-R-I. Sumer. I even Sumer.
And that's in the blue too.
Right. And in the violet, we have thulium again and yttrium.
Again?
Yeah. Thulium.
Where was yttrium?
And yttrium.
Oh, yttrium. And they're in what range? Violet.
Violet. No. The human skin. Contains the 7 basic minerals on the surface. And all the other 5 basic minerals are under the surface, together the trace minerals. There is no trace mineral on the surface of your skin. They are underneath the skin. And you don't have all 12 basic minerals on the surface of your skin. You only have 7. And I didn't make them. I'm stuck with them. And 1 is for each endocrine gland in your system. So when the yogis talk about his chakras and the 7 chakras and different things, those were the ancient ways of talking in reference to distribution of minerals and their reaction to time in the human body. And I'm going to tell you what are the 7 basic minerals on the surface of your skin. And if you don't want to put them in, when you eat 3 times a day, don't blame me for wrinkling away.
Get your pen there.
It's very important.
When you hear a doctor tell you, you got to get calcium.
But Donna, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Just put on the towel. Calcium.
You need calcium. You need sodium. You need chlorine. You need phosphorus. You need sulfur. How many you got now?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We need 2 more, right?
Those ones.
I give you 2 guesses and see if you guys can figure out which 2 would come in there. You know the 12.
Let's say nitrogen.
Nitrogen is a gas.
Iron.
No.
Magnesium.
I can guess.
Manganese. Never mind.
That's right. Manganese.
That's what I meant to say. I really meant to say that.
Manganese.
Silicone.
Silicone.
No.
No.
Chlorine.
My notes from last time say magnesium. They say magnesium, not manganese.
Magnesium is the one on the outside.
Yeah. You said manganese just now.
No, I'm sorry, magnesium.
Right again.
Made to believe I was wrong again. Big difference.
Well, what's the other one?
Potassium.
Potassium. These are your 7 basic minerals that must be in the surface of the skin. And if they're not there, you're going to break down.
The skin food have all these in it?
Yes.
Oh, Madonna, just while we're on skin food, this is the case. Everybody keeps saying that skin, or like the skin food, why is that smell in the skin food that you have? Because the rumor's going around that it has urine in it. Does it?
No.
what is it that gives it that?
Smells like cholesterol.
Is it? Yeah.
Sulfur. That's what we call it.
What is it?
It's a sulfur point. Yeah.
It's sulfur.
Oh, it's sulfur.
Sulfur.
Yeah.
Skin food?
Or it's the cream and stuff.
The lotion. Thanks.
It's
sulfur.
Nope. It's short.
You put it on your face.
You drink, you get wrinkles.
It's sulfur.
But where did the sulfur, the substance, sulfur is from?
Almond oil has what?
Almond oil.
It's almond oil.
But it's a food.
Oh, wow.
But almond oil doesn't smell like sulfur.
But in combination with other stuff.
If you mix almond oil with your other oils, you'll find what you're calling, you'll notice the oil or sulfur is there.
Almond oil?
Where do you recommend putting it besides your face?
I put skin food all over my body because it's skin food. And the only reason it is, to go in through my mouth, pecking oil takes priority over any damage on the skin. And therefore, the injury part will not be fed first. The healthy parts will feed first, or whatever is left over may get to the injured part. So it will starve to death, and then possible I may hemorrhage or I may have pus forming, and then I may have to go and get it cut or cleaned by the doctor. But if I put it right there on the surface, it will start feeding, bypassing the mouth, and before you know it, it will heal up and it leaves no scar. It may leave a spot to indicate it's there, but the spot will go away eventually. You see there's no scar here? I've been cut here many times by a knife.
So this cayenne...
The last cut I had was 3 weeks ago, right here. Now that's a very difficult location to be cut. And go feel it come.
Come on, Thomas.
Do you do the skin for that cayenne with your cat?
Yes.
It's in the clinic, I know that we talked about.
That's right.
What was that?
Cayenne is a dilator if you put it in your mouth. But if you swallow it with cabbage juice, it's a constrictor in your intestines, and that's the end of your ulcers. So we treat ulcers by 8 ounces of cabbage juice to 1 teaspoon of cayenne, 3 days, and you ain't got no more ulcers, and the doctor's angry at them.
When you say ulcers, what do you mean?
Ulcers, no.
Like in the stomach?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Now you may have spent $800 to get a cut. Because I had ulcers. I'm not talking of things I didn't have. I'm talking of ulcers. I'm talking of cancer. I'm talking of gallstones. The things that will require surgery, I have to have them. Because I'm there.
Did you run by that again? That was 8 ounces.
8 ounces of
cabbage
juice and a teaspoon of cayenne pepper.
When you speak of these seven that have to minerals that have to be on the surface of the skin, it will just your skin will get wrinkled or the whole body will be affected by
the
breakdown.
The outer surface of your skin requires those seven elements to be there.
Externally,
your outer skin requires 7 basic minerals to be there. They are no more the surface of the skin. You can take a piece of the human skin, put it on a microscope, analyze it, and you'll find only 7 basic minerals in it. I didn't make it, I'm stuck with it. But the problem is this, one of them missing, the skin starts to wrinkle. What is wrinkling? Constriction or dilation?
Constriction.
That tells you your skin is a plastic. If those 7 minerals are present in it, and if it's not there, you're the result. And when you see people face wrinkling, you know one of those minerals are not getting in there on time.
Well, what Mark was trying to ask was, do you have to take those minerals internally so that they come through the skin from inside, or can you, you know, like, put them on your face from the outside through skin food?
I have done both.
Okay.
And I have found that when you're sick, with a rupture on the body, through the mouth, pecking order takes the priority over the distribution of the minerals. If you're not sick on the outside of the body, every part of it gets it on time. If it's sick, the pecking order of the healthy area will feed itself first, and the sick area will not get it, and then it can hemorrhage or what?
Pus.
Get pus. So I have to bypass it.
Is that for the whole body or just for the skin?
No. whole body.
Yeah.
So how do you cover it? What's the whole body covered with?
So if it has a rupture outside, first thing you want to get rid of is the cut. If it's a cut, you put cayenne pepper into it.
What if then, it's wrinkling?
Then you take your apple cider.
Yeah, and the body tari.
And body tari and drink it. Or put skin food in it. It'll feed it directly.
Drink the wait a minute, drink what? Drink.
Body tari and apple cider.
I was thinking you drank the skin food.
Oh, well, you probably could.
I wouldn't advise it to put it in your mouth. Skin food is a topical application.
I believe
external.
You.
It's external application. It's designed not to be used through the mouth. Because the very same thing that goes through the mouth, those same minerals, the priority function of pecking order will override any value going through the mouth. So to apply it directly on that area, it will start sealing it up back and feeding it externally. But if you put it here, you have to go through the enzymes, you have to go through the hydrochloric acid. By the time it gets there, the pecking order of the healthy organs are fed first, and the sick one may or may not get nothing. So, if I'm going to wait for that to then have to go lose the limb, because when something turns infested and you don't correct it, you may be too late. You may have to take off that limb. I have a friend who lives in Tennessee who cut his finger. But he didn't do what I told him, so they had to go cut off the tip of the finger. Mm. Oh. Then he learned his lesson, and his wife told him, he says, you'll have to learn the hard way, that's good for you. I can't cry over it. You didn't want to do what the guy told him to do. I told him to throw cayenne pepper in the spot. Yeah. He wouldn't put it.
He
was trying with all kind of stuff, and then the finger became infested. He had to rush it to the doctor, and the doctor says, sir, I will have to tell you that the cut off is possible. So, I have to cut off.
It stings. Linda tried when she cut herself after you said that. It stings, but it seals up. And
if I had never hurt myself in work, and she, Ginger was there when two men came in, two scientist friends of mine.
I was there too.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
What would the guy tell you, the Indian guy?
He was saying that he's recommended it many, many times. I think he
what, cayenne?
Is that
cayenne?
Yeah,
over years ago you told him, and he's seen it proven over and over again that it works.
Yeah.
And he told there was a whole room full of us having lunch like we are here, and there were other people there that said that it works and it leaves no scars or a very minute.
Is there an amount that you go for?
No.
Just dump it on there.
You just take that shaker.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, but if it was a large wound, say if you arrived at the site of an accident, an automobile accident, and someone was bleeding and really...
I would pour it into the wound, and if I had a piece of Johnson, we call that thing?
Gauze,
I'd just cover it over and put a little, sticker thing.
Adhesive
on it. But I'd rather sprinkle the whole stuff and let the person walk with his skin exposed. Because I know what can happen. By sprinkling it, no dog or bug is going to get into it because they don't like cayenne pepper. Mm-hmm. No bacteria is going to go there because they don't like black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean cayenne pepper. And the skin is not going to tear away because the cayenne pepper is going to stop the stretching of the skin from ripping beyond the point where it's ripped, number one. Instantly, it starts constricting and the thank you. The blood is going to stop running out. It's going to start to coagulate.
It's a secret.
Okay.
And as soon as it dries in a matter of 24 hours, it'll leave like a powder stuff. It'll fall off. Then it'll form like a ridge. Then in the next 24 hours, I'll put skin food. And the next 24 hours, it'll start to look like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
If you were to dust a garden with cayenne powder, would it keep the grasshoppers out of it?
No, it won't.
No?
No.
What about sulfur?
Somebody just said in Texas that sulfur is good for chiggers and ticks. Would sulfur work for grasshoppers here?
I don't know.
Well, we'll let you know.
But my question is, why do I want to chase away a grasshopper? And he's entitled to eat some of the junk.
What if he's going to eat it all, though?
Talk to him, not going to eat it all.
Do you have anything for burns?
Thank you.
You wouldn't use that on a burn, would you? Mm.
There, okay.
Also, this one, just sit.
Down.
If you get a burn, you may not want to do it. But I'll tell you, believe it or not, push your hand in a bottle of honey and just rub it over the board.
Honey?
That sounds
good.
Terry said,
I had enough burns in my body, and I've used it. And I know a lot of people got burned. Marcia got burned. Christina's got burned, and they're a nurse, and she's a nurse. And she'll tell you, honey works, where the rest don't work.
Used it.
Will it keep it from scarring?
Yes.
If one tank, now I'm not trying to get on body tidy, but it has to do with skin food, but it goes through body tidy. Taking body tidy, it's like I get these patches on my lower back, which is either I'm not assimilating the minerals, or I'm doing some kind of pushing something else out.
That's more accurate.
Is
that asking a little question? Have you had any surgical work done in the body? Injections or anything?
Lots of injections.
That is what is pushing out.
So it's not a non-assimilation?
No.
Okay, so where it comes out, it itches like crazy, and I put the skin food on, the itching goes, but it doesn't heal, it keeps coming out.
Because whatever's in there has to come out
someplace.
And the body tidy is replacing the synthetic mineral with an organic mineral.
So you're getting rid of
and
toxins.
Then it will quit on its own and seal up itself.
It will quit.
Because it's only replacing the inorganic with organic.
Because it got to be raging. And I thought, my gosh, I'm not assimilating the minerals, so I'm sloughing them off.
Just pushing it out. The seven basic minerals are on top of the surface of the skin. We have five basic underneath. What are the five basic underneath now?
The ones that the seven are.
Iron.
Now, why is it underneath and not on top?
Because it's in the blood.
Good. Now you answer the question. Where is the manganese supposed to be? Your nerve end? Where is your nerve end located? Outside the skin or under the skin?
Under the skin.
Now give me the other three now.
Silicon,
where is that supposed to be? Underneath the skin or above the skin?
Underneath.
Tissue.
It's supposed to be in your bone to help it hold itself together when it's broken. So where is your bone located?
Underneath.
So that's why it's underneath and not outside.
Calcium
is also both places. On top of the skin and under the skin, because the skeleton is made of what?
Calcium.
No. And the skin has to have calcium to make it what? Flexible. Mm. Otherwise it won't flex. Now, we've already named how many?
Four.
Where is the other one now going? Where's the other?
Carbon.
Where is that located?
Calcium.
Everywhere.
Underneath the skin.
But everywhere.
But everywhere under your skin. Good. Congratulations.
There's no carbon on your skin at all?
No
stuff
carbon
you
on
flick
the skin.
Off the dry skin?
Nope. Not on top of the skin. It's just one of those seven breaking loose from a rupture.
Awesome.
Being pushed out from the skin. But not there. Both places. Carbon is underneath, iron is underneath, silicon is underneath, and manganese is underneath, and fluorine
is underneath.
Is underneath.
Oh, we're up to six.
No, iron, fluorine, silicon, carbon, and manganese.
Calcium doesn't count?
No.
No, you're right.
Calcium doesn't
count. Skin. No, not, it's already in the skin already.
We've already counted
it. It's already counted once already. It's on the skin. It's in the bone already. It doesn't work around this.
But it is both places.
It exists on the bone, and it exists on the surface of the skin. So it takes its priority when put into the mouth to go on the surface of the skin. Unless you have a broken bone, then it'll go to the bone.
Okay.
So why would you need calcium for the first place? Is it for the broken bone or for the skin to prevent it from wrinkling? If you have a broken bone, you need what?
It's going to get it. It's going to get it second, though, right? Because of the sort of priority.
The priority is because the bone is broken. Therefore, it requires two things to keep it back in place: calcium and silicon. Silicon is already there. If you have a broken bone, calcium going in would go where? To your skin or go to the bone?
Bone.
Now, if you don't have a broken bone and you put calcium in your mouth, where will it go to?
Skin.
I thought you just said the opposite.
I didn't say the opposite.
I thought you said that the healthy part gets it first. Whatever is sound and healthy is going to get it first in the pecking order. And then what's injured will get what's left over.
On the skin.
Well, that only applies to the skin. Okay. All right.
Where's fluorine underneath? Fluorine is underneath the skin.
Yes.
Fluorine's in blood, maybe. Manganese is in the nerve, and silicon is in the bone, and fluorine is?
Teeth.
Calcium.
I mean, don't we brush our teeth with fluoride toothpaste?
Yeah, well, what do you buy it for if it doesn't go to protect your teeth from what?
Acid.
Eating away?
Yeah.
Decay.
So, what is it protecting? Calcium in the teeth or enamel in the teeth?
Enamel.
Also, it's in the enamel.
It doesn't protect your nail. It protects the enamel of the teeth.
And carbon?
What other function that fluorine has underneath your skin?
Cleanser. It cleans.
Yes, from head to toe. Therefore, it keeps traveling through the entire system. As a what?
Cleanser.
As a cleanser.
In the blood.
In the blood.
It's a monomy. Mm-hmm.
When I said the minerals going in through the mouth to an area, they'll take the pecking order. I'm referring to a rupture on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
It will not go to the rupture of the skin first and feed through the mouth. It'll only go to the healthy portion first, and whatever is left over will go to the ruptured area on the skin. That's putting any substance through the mouth. So if you put calcium in the mouth, it will not go to the skin if the skin is ruptured. It will go to the healthy functions first. But if you have a broken bone, the calcium will go to the broken bone first before it will go to the skin. That good?
Yeah.
Okay. You got it right?
I should know well. I remember. Yeah.
Someone told me if you break a bone, you put a magnet above it and below it, it'll mend faster because of the attraction.
Yes, I've done that because I was the first person to do it in this country, in Canada.
Yeah, he did it to me.
I was the first man to do it in Canada. I had every bone broken twice. And the technique was then adopted by the Germans in 1969. Well, I was the first person to do it because I had broken bones. And I hooked up another technique. Today now they have a special machine now made in Germany. They sell it to doctors now. If you break the bone, first thing I'll ask you to do is go to a doctor. Let him put a cast around it, an x-ray, to be sure that the bone is lined up. then you come back. I'm going to place that little electrical gadget that I have on one spot and the other spot of the bone. And I'll plate the fracture electromagnetically with a calcium. You understand the word plating? You ever see a plated metal?
Yeah.
What did they do to it?
Electromagnet with a charge, and the metal has another charge, so that when they dip it in, the plating attracts to the metal.
Now listen carefully, the metal talking. It does what?
The bath has a charge and the metal has another charge, so when they drop the metal into the charge, what they want to plate it with is attracted to the metal and it plates it. That's how they do gold plating, silver plating, any kind of...
You're moving material to lock itself magnetically to another material by virtue of electroplating. It's a technique of magnetically transferring and bonding materials to another material.
I understand that.
Good, okay. Your bone, when it breaks, would you think your bone has magnetism?
Mm-hmm.
Where would the magnetism be located in the bone?
Wherever the iron is.
Hmm?
Wherever the iron is.
Iron and calcium don't get together, so don't go muck up your head. The worst thing you can eat is cheese and meat.
Cheeseburger.
Pizza. Yeah, right.
Pepperoni pizza.
If you're in a Jewish home, they throw you out very fast. But it's all right if you're suffering with dusty fly sickness, it'll kill you.
Oh, that's right. That's where the cheeseburger
is. See how funny nature is? If you have testy sickness right there now, that's the only thing I could give you. A piece of raw meat, if possible, raw or meat, and a piece of cheese will stick it up in your mouth. And in 24 hours, the testy fly sickness is cured.
Wow.
But if I want you to have cancer, I'll feed you cheese and meat. Mm. Well, we'll come to the chemistry then. Iron has nothing to do with this.
Okay, so there's no magnetism, then there's electromagnetism.
This is a normal looking arm, not broken, running from the where?
Shoulder.
The shoulder, right? That's the head. Your body has elements, they call them minerals. They're in a movement process through the oxygen, but they're at a certain frequency. This ancient people used to call it astral and causal. Modern physics call it magnetic, electrical, chemical. This bone, from this joint to the shoulder to this joint to the elbow, has a magnetic polarity of its own. So here is plus and here is minus. The next bone from the elbow to the wrist, if it's going to stay in there by the law of magnetism, what polarity should this head of the bone be now?
Plus.
And the other one? And if the hand is going to hook up to the wrist, plus, right? And each joint will have its plus and minus down to the tip of your finger. But they didn't know that years ago. Only the Oriental yogis knew that. And that's why they were always concerned, not with the broken bone. And I never seen where hospitals use bone transplant that is successful, other than using calf, or they really get their own bone. If you take your own bone, fine. But any other thing they used to use before was that calf bone. And yet the most important bone that can bond with your bone without having any problem is goat bone. Because the calf bone doesn't develop bone marrow in the bone once it's grafted. Your own bone will build back bone marrow, but a calf bone will not. Goat bone will build back bone marrow. So after a while, they dropped off the cow bone and they went plastic. But it still doesn't build back bone marrow. Goat bone is alkaline. Human bone is alkaline. Cow bone is acid. The bone has a polarity. If you break this bone here, what do you think is going to happen to the polarity in that bone?
The break splits.
Well, it's going to reorganize itself.
Yeah, it'll move.
You're going to have a
minus plus.
A negative and a positive on either side of the break.
The reverse.
Force the two pieces of the bone to do what?
Reverse polarity.
And you'll push each other away, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's why when you look under the the telescope or the
X-ray.
The X-ray, they see the bone is pushing away and doesn't line up. But they will force it by putting a cast around it that will be solid enough to hold the bone so it will bond. But the polarity would shift. Plus will come here and plus will come here. And the minus will go there and the minus will go there.
Mm.
So this minus is going to fight this minus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this minus is going to fight. And between the two plus are going to push. And the image in the X-ray would be like this. Off. Oh, they're never going to be like that. No. I asked the patient to go get a cast put on and come back. Once the cast is put on and he's moving around, then I hook an electrical charge putting one pole there, and this is the unit, and I put the other pole there. I automatically create a reversal of the polarity in the bone. This will switch back to be minus. This will switch back to be plus. This will switch back to be plus. And then it'll go back down and be minus over here. So you have plus, minus, and where the break is would line up to be plus. Now, I apply it for a few seconds to reverse the polarity. The bone is going to slip. Why? Into the slot.
Opposites attract. So it'll be attracted to each other.
Good.
Opposites attract.
Okay, good. Fine. Now, we'll keep the electricity on, and then we're going to make the person eat dolomite, goat cheese, ghee or clarified butter, and spinach and a dill pickle. And we're going to give him minimum 15 minutes treatment in that spot. in 28 days, a normal bone takes 7 weeks to weld. Not weld simply means this. Calcium builds up around here. Calcium builds up around here, and it's called a weld. You ever see a weld? That's it. Calcium coming in here without any silicon, and just hanging on there and welding. Over here, with the electro contact and the food carrying in calcium with silicon, this break now plates itself. At the end of 28 days, it's completely plated, but we keep up the treatment for the full 7 weeks. But we send the patient to go get an x-ray at the end of 28 days to see how it's doing, to freak out the doctor. When he goes there and the doctor sees, he said, this is doing fantastic.
What did you do?
I'm a good doctor.
He gets credit or have you not? Point is, at the end of the 7 weeks, of the, then he goes and he gets it, and it's plated and even. The only thing would be where the cast is, around there would be puffy. Not too much, but in this position, the puffiness would be big like that. In this one, the puffiness would be pretty small, small, but not big enough, but it would be close to the end of the elbow and possibly towards the wrist, a slight puffiness. What we do, as soon as they remove the cast, we then give the person another treatment to displace the carbon dioxide that has caused the puffiness in the lactic acid that was there when the break occurred. And then, by virtue of massage and reflex, the swelling is gone in a matter of 2 days. The third day, the flexibility of the arm is there. Mm-hmm. But in the first day, the flexibility has already come back. Now, we can go deeper. If there's crystals locked around the break, then we go to the insertion of a needle and hook an electrical charge to break it up. That's called electrical acupuncture. But the break is plated for the first time instead of welded by nature, building a ridge around it. But this is something I had to do to me when I was in Canada. But now they're making it with equipment and they can use magnet. But what the magnet is intended for is to restore the magnetic polarity of the bone so that the bone will line up. And if you keep the magnet around the spot, the calcium will do the plating. But if they don't give the calcium in the way I told you to eat it, it doesn't have any silicon going in, then the bone is still going to have a problem because people have had the magnet used there, didn't put in silicon with the calcium, they just ate the calcium cheese and milk, and it still had ridges and had problem with it. So we have to go in there and do electrical treatment, and then have to feed them with the calcium and silicon and give them apple cider vinegar to eat away the old calcium and put back new calcium by the feta cheese and the dill pickle and the ghee or clarified butter and the spinach with iron bond the bone. Now coming back to milk and meat.
Milk and what?
Meat. Doesn't anybody like a cheeseburger?
Yeah.
It's good, right? Made in a day. Okay. Here is the udder of the cow. in the inside part of the udder, right to the nipple, we have the lactic acid in the form of milk, which contains calcium, the mineral. Around this portion of the udder is a portion called the container of the hemoglobin or blood, which contains iron. And that's a healthy udder containing milk surrounded by the hemoglobin. So iron and calcium, are they together or separated?
Separated.
Good. Here comes a calf with a mouth to suck the milk in downwards by the principle of compression and dilation. Compress, dilate, compress, dilate, forcing what to come down? The lactic acid, which is the milk, and the calcium that is in the milk to feed the cow or the calf. As long as the calf is nursing without bruising the udder, you don't have a problem with that calf. But the moment that lip of the calf bruises the udder of the mother cow, and the hemoglobin containing the iron moves in with the calcium into the calf's mouth, what is the owner of the calf going to do when he comes and see the calf like that on the ground? He knows what has happened. He knows the calf has bruised the udder of the mother cow and has taken in what?
Iron.
Iron in the form of blood. So he's going to go and examine the mother cow, and he's going to see the bruise, and then he's going to see the quivering calf, and you know what's going to happen to the calf in a little while, because it's going to die. No sense you can call a veteran, you can't pump it. So he automatically takes it to the slaughterhouse and ends his life. The FDA inspector, which I had to sometimes do that work one time for a living, cannot refuse to okay that meat. And give me a genuine reason why I can't refuse to okay it.
Why can't what?
Why I cannot refuse to okay the dead calf from swallowing milk and blood and is now slaughtered for food for the general public. Give me a genuine reason why I cannot refuse to okay it. Because they can jump on me all over, and I'll be, as an agricultural inspector, give me a good reason why I cannot refuse it to okay it. What did the calf do to get sick?
Ingested blood or iron.
He got blood in with the milk, which is iron and calcium, into his body. That got it sick, and it healed over, and in the process of dying. The owner slaughtered it, getting it ready for resale. It has to be inspected. Can an inspector refuse it? He cannot, for two reasons. One, the meat is not showing evidence of bacteria present in it. There is no evidence of bacteria causing the death of the calf, number one. And there is no evidence of a toxic substance in the form of poison entering the animal's body from an external inorganic source to cause the death of the animal, to make it toxic for the human consumption. The animal got sick from taking in blood and milk, which is calcium and iron, into the intestinal tract, forcing it to become vulnerable and would not last out due to that combination in there, and the owner went ahead and ended its life preparing it for marketing. There is no evidence of bacteria or any organic spray, inorganic poisoning spray that is ready to this body. It is ready for marketing to be eaten. Now, the milk in the mother's calf or in the mother's udder is no longer good. Because why?
Good blood in it.
The blood and the calcium are combining, right? Mm-hmm. So, she may have approximately 1.5 gallons of milk still in her. The farmer is going to do two things to her now before he gets rid of her.
Milker.
He's going to pump out all that milk and then he's going to turn it over for slaughter, because a bruised udder is no longer an asset. She cannot have calves nursing in it once it's ruptured. It'll always keep rupturing. He can put her out to pasture if he wants, but he'll turn it over for slaughter. It's not containing a bacterium. It's not being hurt by any poison spray. Therefore, it's edible at the market level and approved for edibleness. But that milk in that cow is bought up by Mr. Hershey to make chocolate bars. But you don't know that. And he will advertise perfect Cadbury Hershey chocolate bars containing healthy calcium and iron for your delicious dessert, together with a little almond or a walnut or a pecan, and put a little caramel. And it's not poisonous because there is no toxic substance. It's just a chocolate candy for your sweet tooth. Now, if you eat it at the wrong time, you will get sick. You eat it at the right time, and you can laugh at the world and never get sick.
When's the right time for the job?
Morning.
Oh, yeah, morning.
Now, where is calcium located? At 9 a.m. going into what, 12 midday? And where is iron located from 12 midday going on right up to 7 o'clock, right? So if I want to eat that nice Hershey chocolate bar containing a nut, let's say it's an almond.
Midday.
12 noon.
12 o'clock on the dot.
Right on the dot, you got it. Or 10 to 12.
Or 10 to 12?
Or 10 after.
This way, from 10.
What if it doesn't have
that? 10 to 12, going on to 12. Still. Perfect. Because the milk is phasing out and the iron is coming in. See, the milk has calcium.
Mm-hmm.
That's phasing out. And the iron is coming in.
Except I thought milk was afternoon anyway. I thought milk was noon to 7. Or noon to 6.
Yes, noon. So, well, where's your calcium now? In what light zone?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Red. Now listen carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Iron has been formed in the blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's mixed with the milk containing calcium, right?
Mm-hmm.
But together, they don't make chocolate bar. You got to add something else to make chocolate bar. What you're gonna add? Cocoa powder that grows where?
On the ground.
Hmm?
Trees.
On a tree. Right? The almond is growing on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gonna mix the
sugar
powder cocoa with the almond, with the blood that is in the milk. It's not a bad substance. It's just calcium and iron mixed for the first time. And they're gonna blend it with cocoa and honey or
sugar
to sweeten it to make a chocolate bar and put a nut in it. So if I was to eat it, I would eat it exactly between 10 to 12 to 12 o'clock, going on to 1 o'clock. But after 12 o'clock, I don't need it. If I want to do it. At lunar time, full moon time, am I allowed to eat it? If I eat it at 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock tonight and don't bless it, am I entitled to my belly ache?
Mm-hmm.
If I eat it at 8 o'clock tonight and bless it, would Brother Jesus let me know? But you don't expect me to go keep fooling myself all the time, knowing that it's not ideal. And if, especially when you come into a kosher home, they don't serve you no meat and dairy products in the same plate, because that is considered non-kosher. Now, non-kosher simply means what? Not sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mean anything more in Jewish language. I have to study myself. In Hebrew, word kosher means sanitary, not non-kosher, not sanitary. Now, so they would not touch the milk and the blood containing calcium and iron in a food at the same plate. But let's say you were living in Africa and you got stung by the testy fly.
No medicine.
There is no medicine to correct it. But the shaman will beat the drum, look up the sky and cry out to the Lord and beat the drum. And then all of a sudden he will see blood and he will see milk. And then he says, whoa, I saw this in my head, blood in the milk. He gets the vision of blood in the milk, which means calcium and iron combination. So he goes to do what? The horse, if they got a horse or a cow. And so he's going to go to the, stick it to his knife, right? Get a little blood in it. Then he's going to pump the what?
The milk.
The udder, and get a little milk out of it. And then he's going to stir. And he's going to sing a song, and you, come on, brother, sister, take some. And everybody who has had a testy sickness, put meat in the mouth 24 hours out. They're alive.
That's the basic diet of the Maasai, isn't it? That's blood and milk.
To protect them against the sleeping sickness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were in Mongolia, and you get stung by the same dog one thing in the desert, how will you correct it?
Go find
the Mongolians do this.
Your local yak.
They get the yak, squeeze the milk out. Go take their arrow and stick the side of the horse that they ride, or the jackass, or, and get a little blood from the vein, mix the two up in a, put it in a horse saddle bag, you know, those little things that look like a water bag, a water bottle, and they tie it to the horse, and they run the horse at a good trot. And it comes out what you call curation. You ever see curation? What it looks like?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a chocolate. In the army in the World War II, when they issued the soldiers curation, that was part of the products they had to carry.
Mm-hmm.
Milk incorporated with blood. And they was to protect them, insulate them against being bitten by the testy fly in the tongue.